Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And welcome back to the second hour of our Super Monday show. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and very pleased to welcome this hour the Archbishop of San Francisco, Salvatore Cordiglione. Archbishop Cordiglione, thank you very much for coming in and being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on the show.
A tough trip all the way down the full length of California.
It's a long state.
Yeah, it is. Archbishop Cordiglione is a native of San Diego, right near here where we are. He was ordained a priest in 1982, earned a doctorate in canon law. Is that right? From the Pontifical Gregorian University?
Yes, that's correct.
And then before being ordained auxiliary bishop here in San Diego in 2002, he served for 7 years as an assistant at the Supreme Tribunal of the Apostolic Signatura. That's the church's highest canonical court. In 2009, Pope Benedict XVI appointed him as the fourth bishop of Oakland, and 3 years later, he was appointed Archbishop of San Francisco. That's a busy life. So the highest canonical court, is there another kind of court that the church has? Or?
Most people are familiar with the Roman Rota, which is the last court of appeal in judicial cases. Apostolic Signatura has a variety of competencies in the area of canon law and church cases, administrative cases, as well as certain technical appeals against the Rota. But it doesn't try a case on the merits of the case that a Rota has judged. It's the last court of appeal.
Oh, it's an appeal. I see. So
there's certain technical appeals.
If there was an error in the
trial. If someone believes the sentence is invalid or they were denied the right of defense— Or they were denied having a case reopened, they could appeal to the signatura. But the signatura does not actually handle the case itself.
Oh, I see. I see. So canon law, if you studied canon law in the early 80s, they had just changed canon law right before that, hadn't they?
That's why I was sent to study canon law. The revised code of canon law was promulgated after the council in 1983. And so I was sent to study in 1985. So were many other priests. The Casa Santa Maria, which is the graduate house for American priests doing studies there, was full during those years. About 2/3 were studying canon law.
Oh, because maybe their bishop said, go over there and learn this.
Learn the new code. So when I was in my theology studies, the code was being drafted and we were studying the old code, but also the schemas of what was going to become the new code.
Yeah. So what's the advantage of the new code? Just in the general terms, is it just that there's more? The world has changed. We need new canon law, or was there a change in the spirit of it?
Well, there was a lot of new legislation after the council, and there continues to be new legislation. There have been changes to the code since the promulgation of the code in 1983. The first code of canon law was promulgated in 1917. So maybe a better question would be why even have a code of canon law? What does it help having a code of canon law? It helps because there were over the centuries different collections of laws, and there was no one reference to go to. So it was Gratian in the 12th century who really started the science of canon law with his document on the Concordance of Discordant Canons.
Oh,
it's actually the name of it. Yeah. So he looked at all of these collections of laws and compared the canons. Sometimes they were disagreeing, and he integrated it. But then there was lots of legislation in the centuries following. There were different collections of code of canon law. Finally, there was what they called the Corpus Iuris Canonici, the body of canon law, which was basically putting different sources of law together. Then beginning with Pope Pius X and concluding with Pope Benedict XVI, they codified everything in 1917. Since the Second Vatican Council, the decision was that they needed to recodify after the council and all the changes in new legislation.
I see, in the light of the council, kind
of. Yes.
You have annually, I think, the second largest walk for life up there in San Francisco. Isn't that right?
Yes, we do.
Did you just have it?
We just had it last Saturday.
And how did everything go?
Fantastic. It was a great success. We always begin with the Mass at St. Mary's Cathedral, and it's the largest Mass every year. The cathedral is jam-crowded. It's a large cathedral, too. It seats 2,500 people. Not only were the pews all full with people, But it was jam-crowded in the back and all along the sides. There were probably 4,000 people. I hope I don't get us in trouble with the fire department. But there are probably about 4,000 people there. So, and then,
really?
Then the rally begins at the Civic Center Plaza and then the walk. There were probably, higher estimates, about 70, 75,000 people. And it grows every year. This has been the largest, as every year has been. Every year has been the largest. Uh-huh. And this year, once again,
great.
We hit a new high.
But I don't mean this to be overly critical, but we Californians don't think of San Francisco as the center of pro-life activity. How does San Francisco receive the walk and the walkers?
At first, pretty violently.
Really?
Yes. The origin is rather interesting. It started by some Catholics who wanted to do something back in 2003 when the mayor at the time was issuing those same-sex marriage licenses, even though it was against the law.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
So it really began out of a concern to save marriage and family. And when they were trying to think what could they do to have the most impact, they kind of morphed into this walk for life idea, working with a local priest. And they tell me I was at, I think, the third or fourth one. I wasn't at the first two or three. But they tell me at the first ones, there were, of course, it was a lot smaller. I think they got 5,000 people the first time, something like that. And there were a lot of counter-protesters who were very kind of vile. Over the years, that has waned. There still are counter-protesters, but they're in a confined place, and there are no confrontations. And so there is some of that. But I love to say that, actually, there are many San Franciscos. People have, like, this monolithic idea of San Francisco.
Right.
San Francisco has gone through a lot of different eras of history, and all of those eras, you know, it moves into another era, but it has vestiges of the previous era. So San Francisco, of course, was a very Catholic city in the first half of the 20th century. And the church is still an integral part of the fabric of the society there, especially with our school system and our other institutional presence. So there's still a lot of a sense of the church there and its importance in the community, even though there are some who kind of don't like that. But I think overall, the local officials are very willing to collaborate with the church on things that we can work on together when there are a lot of needs in the city. So I say there are some that, yeah, don't like it, but it's not – I think initially there was a lot more sort of orchestrated resistance to it, but now it's kind of accepted as one of the annual things that goes on there. The local reporting in the local paper is very objective about it. So I think people probably feel less threatened by it nowadays than they did initially.
And do you think it's changing hearts and minds? Do you think it's having an effect?
Certainly the pro-life movement overall is growing,
yes.
Gaining a lot of momentum, and it's always encouraging to us all to see so many young people.
Right.
Huge numbers of young people both at the Mass and at the walk itself. So, they carry the sign. The young people carry the sign, "I am the pro-life generation." So they're beginning to understand that how evil abortion is and how violent it is, and we should not there are always better alternatives than killing the life in the womb.
Right, right. Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, Archbishop of San Francisco, is our guest this hour. Our number, 888-318-7884. That's 888-31-TRUTH. Before we go to break, Archbishop, I wanted to ask you about the Pope, I almost said Pope, but no, it's Benedict the 16th Institute. You founded the Benedict the 16th Institute. Can you tell us about it?
Yes. I had this vision of founding an institute to assist parishes in the development of their liturgy and improving the quality of the celebration of the liturgy. So this is shortly after I went to San Francisco, maybe a couple of years after I was there. And Pope Benedict, we know how much he's given to the church and his catechesis in the area of liturgy and guidance in that area. So I thought it'd be appropriate to dedicate it to him. So it's the Pope Benedict the 16th Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Worship. So music is kind of the heart of it, but not exclusively of music. It includes all areas of sacred beauty. The idea is to open the door of sacred beauty for God's people. We can think about the three attributes of God, of truth, goodness, and beauty, and we can look at these as three doors to evangelization, that some doors work more with some people, other doors work more with other people. A lot of people, the door they come through is the door of goodness, and I think the church is very good at and proactive at helping the poor through our Catholic Charities, St. Vincent de Paul. Parishes are doing many wonderful things. We're doing an awful lot to help people in all kinds of different needs, homeless, immigrants, single parents. So we're doing a lot. And so that bears witness to the love of Christ. And a lot of people, I think, encounter Christ coming through that door of goodness. There's the door of truth, which is a lot of what Catholic Answers is about, right? We have this body of teaching that we receive from the Lord that has been reflected on and developed through saints and scholars for these last 2,000 years. And some people come through the door of truth. Where they read, they study, and they discover the truth as it's been handed down through the Catholic Church. What we need to do is open wide the door of beauty. I think this is the door that's been probably ignored.
Yeah.
Over the last couple of decades, few decades, actually. And again, what a tremendous patrimony we have in the whole area of sacred beauty, of music, art, architecture, even literature. So the idea of the Benedict the 16th Institute is to open the door of sacred beauty to God's people through concerts, through lectures, through teaching choirs, chant camps, and eventually to develop resources for people in the parish to have a deeper formation for the liturgy, the ministries they exercise in the liturgy.
Archbishop Cordiglione from the Archdiocese of San Francisco is our guest in studio today here in San Diego. 888-318-7884 is the question. If you have questions about the Benedict XVI Institute, about beauty as a doorway to God and how we can make better use of that doorway, give us a call. 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and his DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a savings of over 70%. Both the book and the DVD were made specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue, and to give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds. So that together, we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of the book Persuasive Pro-Life or the DVD Making the Case for Life for just $5 each, just call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers Magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers Magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order. Order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
Call now with your question. 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host, joined by Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione of the Archdiocese of San Diego. Of San Francisco. I beg your pardon. No, I belong to the Diocese of San Diego, and you were, in fact, ordained here, a priest of the Diocese of San Diego. You were a pastor for a while. down right next to the Mexican border.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes, in the town of Calexico. It's right on, literally four blocks from the border. The church is on 4th Street.
Yeah. It's nice down there. You like it over there in Calexico?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I really felt like I was sort of coming into my own.
Yeah.
As the pastor there.
Man, it gets hot in the summertime down there, though.
The one thing I couldn't get used to was the heat.
What's worse, Roman summer or Calexico summer?
Good question. Good question. I would say as bad as Rome is probably Calexico.
Really?
Because it's there are days it gets up to 120 degrees in the shade.
Yeah, so but it's a dry heat. 888-318-7884, our number, 888-318-7884. We are talking about beauty as a doorway to God. And the occasion of that is that the Archbishop has founded an institute called the Pope Benedict XVI Institute. And it started out very focused on liturgy, but it has broadened out to encompass beauty in a much wider way.
Yes.
So our society is full of all kinds of art, but it seems like the more art we have, the less beautiful the world gets these days. I mean, how do you judge whether something is beautiful or not?
I think people take that maxim about beauty is in the eye of the beholder too extreme. With kind of this age of relativism that we're living in, as if there are no objective standards of beauty. Something you can tell something is beautiful if it's universal, you know, if it translates, people of different cultures, different parts of the world can recognize something as beauty. It has a certain consistency to the design, would be one aspect. So there are certainly standards, and even though there are different styles, and even traditionally in the church, we have different styles of art and of architecture.
Yeah.
But there's this kind of the consistency of the design that captures a truth or captures an emotion through the medium is an objective standard of beauty.
You know, there's a parish here in this diocese, St. Michael's downtown, and I notice every time I go there, it seems that the pastor must be very insistent upon this. Everything from the parking lot to the outer patio to it's beautiful, and it seems like they pay attention to the details of the beauty. And when I notice that when I go there, I feel like I'm in a certain sense leaving the world. I don't know how to put, but that pastor, just the way he has that church, really made me start to think it's really important that these churches be beautiful, and not just that a painting or something, but that there's a kind of refuge in beauty, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Unfortunately, for a long time after the council, this sort of idea of functionalism set in.
Yeah.
And so church spaces were very kind of practically oriented, but devoid of beauty and devoid of a sense of the mystical or the transcendent. There's a famous story in San Francisco about after it must be the first church built to be a cathedral after the council, because the previous cathedral had burned down in 1962. And then the archdiocese shortly after began a project of building a new cathedral, but in accordance with the liturgical norms as they had come out. So it was dedicated in 1971. Which has always struck me from when I first saw it in college as a modern style of architecture which captures a sense of beauty and transcendence.
Yeah.
But the famous story is, so it was dedicated in 1971, and towards right around that time with everything that was going on in society, there was a lot of criticism of the archdiocese for all the money it was spending to build this cathedral. And couldn't this money be better spent to help the poor? A couple of years after it was dedicated, Dorothy Day was in San Francisco for a conference, and it was held at there's a conference center below the cathedral. It was being held there, and someone asked her a question that, don't you think it's kind of paradoxical that we're having this conference here in this big, expensive cathedral when we should be using our money to help the poor? And she said, well, the church does need to be helping the poor, and the church does do a lot to help the poor, and we need to keep that a priority. But there are very few places that poor people can go to that are beautiful. In this building, everyone has access to it, from the mayor of the city to the poorest person in the street.
Amen. Wow. Isn't that a wonderful answer? Yeah.
So beauty, you know, it ennobles the human spirit. It puts us in touch with the divine. And it's one of those things that makes life worth living.
But why do you – I get the sense sometimes that when people want beautiful liturgical music or beautiful liturgy, beautiful churches, that they're almost treated as reactionary by some people. Like, oh, well, you're so backwards, old-fashioned looking. Why can't you – you know, these are trivialities. The important thing, I guess, is – and then whatever the issue of the day, the important thing is that the soup kitchen or that we're welcoming everybody. Or why do you think beauty is so treated as such a backwards thing sometimes?
Unfortunately, we got into these liturgy wars after the council of, you know.
Really? I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, you're old enough to remember that.
Yeah.
I remember it well. But so everything was, I think, put in these categories of liberal, conservative, traditional, or Vatican II, and these false dichotomies. It would have helped if we really read those documents more seriously and pondered them more deeply, because we can see what those documents were saying was actually capitalizing on movements that were going on in the church for centuries, not only with liturgy, but very much liturgy, but the vocation of the lay people in the world is another example of how it was kind of seizing what was going on for these movements and then trying to catapult it to respond to what was going on in the world. So unfortunately, instead of that, this mentality sunk in, what Pope Benedict calls the hermeneutic of rupture, of what was is now being replaced with something new, and people who liked what was come into conflict with those who like what is new. So there's still this lingering in the church. So someone who likes, say, chant rather than contemporary music is conservative and traditional and not Vatican II. But I, when people bring that up or use that vocabulary, I say, well, what does it mean to be a conservative Greek Orthodox?
Uh-huh.
Or a liberal Greek Orthodox? You know, they favor doing a few less litanies during the liturgy. You know?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. And that's how it should be for us.
Right, right.
Now, well, it is admittedly our liturgy is much more diverse now. It's possible to have more different styles of music and to make adaptations and versus before. But nonetheless, we should understand this as trying to find ways to speak to the culture that we're in rather than just trying to sort of mimic the culture that we're in, but find ways that we can communicate more effectively to it. But what gives me hope is that, you know, the young people didn't grow up with these liturgy wars.
Yeah.
You know, Vatican II is ancient history for them. Right. So they're not beholden to this kind of liberal, conservative kind of ideology. And so they can be more, I think, honestly intrigued by what the different traditions the church has in the whole world of liturgy and can, I think, perhaps more authentically explore it and appropriate it.
A lot of calls. So how would we go to calls, Archbishop?
Sure.
Let's go to Brian in Easton, Maryland, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Brian, your question for Archbishop Cordiglione.
Gentlemen, good evening. Thank you for having me.
Happy to.
I'm just so excited. I've followed you for a while. Do I call you Your Grace? Is that your title, sir?
Your Grace is the British usage for an archbishop, so you may use that, yes.
Well, I just think I've read a lot about you. When I saw you on the app, I was so excited. My question is, I'm a layperson, and just I think the most beautiful thing in our faith is we're the only pro-life religion basically in the world, and that we're open to life, and no other religion is. And we have 7 kids, 3 of which are miscarriages, so we have 10 kids total. And it's very lonely, to be honest. And people look at you like you have 2 heads, even in the Catholic Church, for just basically trying to be faithful to the beautiful gift of kids. So I was wondering, what advice do you have for us families who are just trying to keep our heads down and be faithful? And I'm not trying to complain, but it does feel kind of lonely sometimes when you have a big family, even in the Catholic Church. And we have a great parish, but not a lot of big families.
Yes, I've heard this from other parents of large families. That's why I always make it a point to congratulate them on their beautiful family when I meet such families. I understand how it can feel lonely, but there are other people who share your conviction of the truth. and the beauty of the truth. So I think it's important to find people who understand that, that you can share faith with and share fellowship with, so you can strengthen each other in living those the values that come from the faith and not feel so lonely. Maybe there are some family movements or communities where you're at where you could connect with a community of people that are dedicated to living the fullness of the church's truth.
Does that work for you, Brian?
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Seek out like-minded Catholics.
God bless you. That's another one. Yeah, like that's old-fashioned Catholic, but but it's not. Thanks so much for that call. We were discussing beauty as a door to God, and one that we can make better use of as Catholics. That's what the Benedict XVI Institute is about, founded by the Archbishop of San Francisco, who is here to discuss beauty and liturgy with us today. 888-31-TRUTH is the number. We'll be right back with your calls and Archbishop Corleone right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Whatever I have learned, writes Catholic Answers founder Carl Keating, I have learned from the masters of the craft. In his new book, Booked for Life, a bibliographic memoir of an accidental apologist, Carl gives future generations a roadmap of what it takes and what it means to become a Catholic apologist. In the way only Carl can, he recounts numerous real-life situations he has encountered in his long career that illustrate the apologetic lessons he's learned. Then, drawing on a lifetime of experience, Carl reveals the books that helped him learn to defend the Catholic faith. Order your copy of Booked for Life today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Do you subscribe to Catholic Answers magazine? We hope, but if not, right now we've got a deal that you're going to love. We've reduced the price and thrown in a free digital subscription when you subscribe. That's right, subscriptions to Catholic Answers magazine just got cheaper, $10 less on one-year subscriptions and $20 less on two-year subscriptions. And right now, when you purchase a subscription, you get a subscription to the digital edition added to your order for free. With a deal like that, it's the perfect gift for friends, family members, seminarians, your priest, even yourself. When you get right down to it, what other gift has the potential to touch hearts and reap eternal rewards? Log on today to CatholicAnswersMagazine.com and sign up yourself, your friends, and your family for a magazine that is bound to make a difference in their lives and the lives of those they meet. Share the faith. Defend the faith. Catholic Answers Magazine from Catholic Answers, the most trusted name in Catholic apologetics.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I said to the sisters one day, what do you think you're going to look like in heaven? Oh, some of them had absolutely magnificent ideas. I didn't think of one of them. So I got desperate because then my turn came. I didn't know what to say. And so in desperation, I said, what do you think I'll wear in heaven? And they all said with one voice, armor!
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Archbishop Salvatore Corleone of the Archdiocese of San Francisco is with us today. We're discussing beauty and the liturgy. 888-318-7884 is our number. 888-31-TRUTH. We go now to Bill in Portland, Oregon, listening on 88.3 FM, Modern Day Radio. Bill, you are on with Archbishop Corleone. Your question, please.
Well, thank you. Actually, I have two questions. One is I appreciate him making the comments on that it really wasn't Vatican II. So my question is, the first question would be, I always look at what happened to the Mass, especially was more of a pre-60s versus post-60s thing, just because of just how the culture changed, and that even without the council, that all those, unreverence crept in. And then the second thing is that I was wondering what the Archbishop thinks that I think a lot of the decay in society happened that when we got rid of that beauty and reverence, you know, in the church building, the church liturgy, the church art, the church music, and that it got casual. It kind of gave a made us have a casual view about life, a casual view about marriage, a casual view about love, and we just really lost that reverence.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Those are my two questions.
I couldn't agree with you more. Everything is interrelated, and our worship is at the heart of who we are. You know, God created us to worship Him, and we are happy when we worship God rightly. And when we worship God rightly, then everything else will be rightly ordered. But if we're not properly ordered in our worship of God and we're focused more in on worshiping ourselves, everything else is going to be disordered. And you mentioned that about what goes on in the culture of care for the poor, of marriage and family life, and all kinds of institutions, education, and so forth. So it really is important that the liturgy be properly celebrated and our worship be rightly ordered. And that is the very point of beauty in the liturgy. Beauty is one of those attributes of God, and liturgy is supposed to bring us into contact with the divine. And it is one of the ways we participate in the divine. If God made the human race in His image and likeness, nothing else that God created is in His image and likeness, only the man and the woman. Well, God is the creator, and that means we have a certain capacity to create that sets us apart from all the rest of creation, all the animals. So it's our capacity to create beauty. And when we create beauty that's worthy of the worship of the one true God, then we create within ourselves a capacity for the happiness that God wants us to have with Him.
Okay, Bill?
Does that help?
Yes, and thank the Archbishop. I'm actually a teacher, and when he came into the San Francisco a few years ago asking the teachers to kind of toe the line, so to speak, and teach, to teach the beauties of our Catholic faith. And I also got to see him at one of the Walks for Life, a West Coast Walk for Life a couple years ago. So appreciated his presence in both those instances. So
thank you, Bill.
Thank you, and God bless all you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill. 888-318-7884. The number. We go now to Sarah in Houston, Texas, listening on KSHJ. Sarah, you are on with Archbishop Cordiglione.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Archbishop, thank you so much for your comments. I'm just drinking them in. The reason I called is this. I am one of several people who's working very hard in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston, to build an organization for Catholic writers and artists to build up knowledge about their output, to reinforce them in the lonely journey of being a Catholic writer. I am a writer myself. That's the background, and this is my question for you. What spiritual advice would you like to give us to help us as we go on this journey with each other?
I'm so glad you asked this question, because you reminded me of another point about the Benedict XVI Institute. We have on the website an online magazine called Catholic Arts Today, which is precisely to highlight Catholic artists and what Catholics are doing in the area of all of the arts. And to kind of feature them as well as feature Catholic art, but also featuring Catholic artists. So one thing I would suggest is, go on the website. Well, that's for everyone, BenedictInstitute.org, and you can connect with the Catholic Arts Today online magazine. And it'd be great if we could stay in touch, because we're precisely trying to create a space where Catholic artists can be fully Catholic and utilize their talents in a way that gives glory to God, and to be precisely a support for Catholic artists. So maybe through the website, if we can be in touch about that. I think you're on the right track in putting together a group of similar to what I said earlier about being together with like-minded Catholics. So I'd imagine that's also kind of a lonely world, being a faithful Catholic in the world that a lot of artists have to live in. So, but to be together, like a spiritual support group, we have a lot of professional support groups that share faith and grow in their faith. Legatus for CEOs. We have for the medical profession. We have for the legal profession. So we really should have something as well for artists. So I totally commend you for what you're doing and trying to get a group together. Maybe you could find a wise priest to serve as a chaplain for you, to give you some spiritual guidance and to sort of learn from what some of these other professional groups are doing. So those are two things I would say. One is to develop what you have begun doing with the blessing of your archbishop and with a priest who can guide you. And then maybe if you can contact us through our website, we could maybe work together on that as well.
Okay, Sarah?
Yes, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. 888-318-7884, the number. Archbishop Cordiglione from the Archdiocese of San Diego. I'm going to keep doing that. I'm sorry. San Francisco.
You keep wanting to promote this Southern Diocese, huh?
Yeah, I know. We're promoting San Diego to Archdiocese. Yeah, no, we're not. Dave, Tacoma, Washington. Get me out of this trouble, Dave. Listening on Sacred Heart Radio, your question for Archbishop Cordiglione.
Yes, I was just wondering, I heard about it, I was wondering what the purpose of the Pope Benedict Institute is, and I was wondering if it helps people's prayer life, and I think people are doing pretty good, and I was also wondering if the saints in heaven hear our prayers, and I listen to the answer, and I like your show. Thank you.
Okay. So the purpose of the Benedict the 16th Institute is to be a resource for parishes and for people who want to enrich the life of liturgy. So that certainly will help people in their prayer life if our liturgies are more, say, beautifully celebrated. That's going to help people grow spiritually. Using art as a source for prayer is also something that is of ancient origin, praying before icons, praying before other types of sacred art, or meditating on a piece of sacred music. So art itself can be a means to move one to a deeper prayer. So the beauty kind of naturally inspires the soul and lifts the soul closer to God, even natural beauty. And when we see a beautiful sunset, for example, you know, it moves us and we appreciate the beauty of God. So certainly beauty in these ways can help one in one's prayer life and to grow spiritually.
Oh, well, he's not there anymore, so I was going to go back to him. But 888-318-7884, our number. Let's see if I can find a line. William in Little Rock, Arkansas, listening on the EWTN app. You are on with Archbishop Cordiglione from San Francisco. Your question, please.
Your Excellency, thank you so much for your work. I wanted to make sure that you all emphasized the website for what you've started, because it's rich and it can be accessed by any Catholic in the world, and it's inspiring and informative. It just makes me wish that we had one in Little Rock, or at least a branch of it, because of the children and teen chant camps. And Father Weber, who could come out and teach us to be more worshipful. It's just a wonderful effort and a very thoughtful one, and really no questions except just a heartfelt thank you.
You're welcome. I can give you a couple of thoughts, though, on what you've said. Well, first of all, Father Samuel Weber has produced some wonderful resources for parishes and individuals to sing simple chant settings to English text. He's worked on it now. It's published by Ignatius Press, the Pew Missal. It has the readings and for the masses throughout the year, along with the entrance chant and communion chant put to simple chant, as well as the responsorial psalm. And then in the back, there's an index of hymns. So that's a resource for parishes, very easy to get people singing, is one example of the sort of resources he's produced. He also does a lot of work for us in the Archdiocese in leading sung Vespers, and sometimes at Mass too. He has a remarkable ability to teach people to sing. They chant the whole office of Vespers with about a minute and a half rehearsal ahead of time. And
wow.
So he proves that chant is simple to sing and people can take to it readily, and people do sing it very well. So be in touch with the Institute through the website, benedictinstitute.org. I'm happy you know about the chant camps that we will be doing and have been going on here in San Diego for quite some years. And we're bringing them up to San Francisco. These are it's a week of teaching chant to children and teens. They can cover different levels of ability. They've been proven to be very effective. Children love it. They take to it like a duck to water. But what William might be interested in knowing is that we're also going to develop what we're calling Chant Camp in a Box. So we're also going to have a week where we will work with parish music directors to teach them how to teach a chant camp. So this is one thing you can do even at a distance away, as you are in Little Rock. If you could have someone could attend what we'll be offering for this chant camp in a box and bring it back to your diocese, and that person can be in turn a resource for other music directors in the parishes there.
William, thanks very much for that call. Archbishop, I think you have the right moment for this. There's just something so kind of vulgar about our culture in so many instances. I really do think there's a tremendous hunger for something beautiful.
I agree with you. The vulgarity is just is precisely the word that I've noticed. And I think it does create with people a longing. Maybe even they're not even aware of it, but it's somewhere deep in them. They're longing for something that is truly beautiful and ennobling.
We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live. If you have a question about beauty, about the liturgy, about liturgical music that you'd like to share with Archbishop Cordiglione, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here with a couple of very special offers for all of you interested in standing up for the rights of the unborn. January is Pro-Life Month, and to get as many people as we can involved in the pro-life cause, we're making my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, and my DVD, Making the Case for Life, available for just $5 each. That's a saving of over 70%. I wrote this book and I made this DVD specifically with you in mind, to help you engage in sustained and meaningful dialogue and give you the tools you need to change people's hearts and minds, so that together we might build up a pro-life culture, one person, one conversation at a time. To get your copies of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, or my DVD, Making the Case for Life, for just $5, call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Pope Francis said, "All of us are called to mature in our work as evangelizers. We want to have better training, a deepening love, and a clearer witness to the gospel. St. Paul Street Evangelization's online school of evangelization will equip you with the tools you need to be an effective evangelist. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you're unable to give, we'll set you up for free. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Just like the saints of the Counter-Reformation, our own souls are in constant need of reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. We struggle with sin. We become distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. In Reform Yourself, Sean McAfee shows you how these magnificent saints can be guides to your own personal transformation. We all need to reform our souls. Let the saints who reformed the church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to our Super Big Monday show here on Catholic Answers Live. And when I say super big, I mean super big. We have Archbishop Cordiglione from the Archdiocese of San Francisco here helping us through a discussion of beauty, particularly beauty in the liturgy, beauty in music, beauty in art. And that is being promoted by a new institute that he founded, the Benedict the 16th Institute. Our number, 888-318-7884. Archbishop, I want to just say something to you just to try to help everybody out. Did you know that there's a wave of anxiety that goes before you as an archbishop because everybody says, what am I supposed to say? Eminence? Am I supposed to say, what's the other, excellency? Am I supposed to say, how do you prefer to be called? Like, what's your preferred?
Your Excellency or Your Grace is kind of old-fashioned manners. Archbishop is respectful in a kind of more contemporary. Whatever people feel comfortable with is fine with me.
Okay.
But not Eminence.
Because that is...
Eminence is for cardinals.
Yeah. Well, that's aspirational. Chris Check says
that would be a fault to have that aspiration for any priest.
Yeah. But you know what? While we're on the topic, how would you vote? No, I'm just kidding. 888-318-7884, our number. Let's go to Michelle in Lincoln, Nebraska, listening on Spirit Catholic Radio 102.7. Michelle, your question for Archbishop Cordiglione.
Thank you for taking my call and for all the work that you do, Your Excellency. My question is, I'm a musician at our church, and it seems to me like beauty in music is kind of dependent on who you are and what your perception of beauty is. And I've, read a lot of critiques about some of the more contemporary music that is used versus some of the quote-unquote more traditional music that's used. But, I look at many songs across the board, and I can see beauty in the lyrics and in the, notes that are played and everything. And so I guess I just kind of struggle with, who decides what's beautiful music and what's not, and why is there such a kind of a harsh critique of some of the more, I guess I consider, modern music that's used in some churches?
I would think, thinking off the top of my head, that those who react kind of strongly against it, it's because the contemporary music that's used is very often bad music and bad lyrics. But there is, good quality contemporary music available, and a lot of contemporary music uses scriptural text, so you can't go wrong with those words either. But both are important, the quality of the music and then the text itself. I've noticed many of the more recent contemporary songs, the words really focus on the community, and they're sort of celebrating the people gathered rather than be more focused on God. So we have to be careful when we choose the music for the liturgy. But what your question calls to mind, what Pope Pius X taught with his apostolic letter that really began the liturgical renewal movement at the magisterial level with Trolle Sollicitudini, when he spoke about what is worthy for liturgical music, he said it has to have three qualities, which is holiness, beauty, and universality. So beauty is one of those three elements. So again, I mentioned earlier about something beautiful is something that has a universal appeal, and it has a certain holiness to it. It elevates our soul. So you're right. There's also truth in, there's beauty is a matter of taste. There are principles, but there's also room for different types of beauty and different styles, and we have a wider variety of styles of music we can use at Mass. So I think there's people have had probably very bad experiences with music at Mass, and so that leads them to reject any kind of use of contemporary style of music. I think we have to, when we use other styles of music, though, we have to do it in a way that makes it sacred rather than just imitates the way it sounds in the world in a secular way. Ultimately, I suppose the priest who's celebrating the Mass would have to decide what music is appropriate for the Mass, or the pastor of a parish for his parish, a bishop for his diocese, and so forth. But I think it's helpful to educate people to be able to appreciate what is truly beautiful and to understand the meaning of music musically and thematically as well.
Michelle?
Yeah, that is very helpful, and I guess it leads me to, I agree that there is some music out there that is not beautiful and not appropriate, even though it's in the music books. I guess it does lead me, to worry a little bit about maybe some of the music I'm picking out for church is not beautiful. And so is there some good source or a good list out there somewhere about here's some good songs and here are songs we should not sing?
There's no explicit list that I know of. Some dioceses have lists of songs that are approved or perhaps disapproved. I think that would be up to the parish music director to be able to appreciate that and decide what to use and what not to use. I like to say one good guiding principle in using contemporary music, well, any kind of hymn for that matter, is the hymns and songs are really not integral to the Mass. In the church's liturgical tradition, hymns are used for the divine office. Each hour has a hymn. The Mass has these antiphons, the entrance chant or introit, and then the communion chant, which are scriptural texts. That's what's integral to the Mass, and it's supposed to be sung or recited if there's no music at that point. The fourth of the four options that the general instruction gives is to substitute a hymn or a song at that point, but that's what we do, 99.9% of the time. So if that's the case, one can always look for a song, especially if they're doing contemporary music, look for a song that is based on that scriptural text and use that for that particular Mass. So that this is an example of how to integrate the music that's sung within the Mass itself. And then, of course, a parish music director would have the knowledge to discern what is good quality music and what is bad. So, again, the decision based on the music, quality of the music, and the text.
Thanks, Michelle, very much. You talked about being prepared for beauty, and I think that maybe one of the things that's difficult for pastors is even if they want a very elevated kind of beauty, we are often not prepared to know what's beautiful or to appreciate the beautiful in today's world.
That is true. That is true. We need to educate people to appreciate beauty.
Let's go to England. Giuseppe, watching on YouTube Live. Thanks for watching on YouTube Live. Giuseppe, you are on with Archbishop Cordleone. Your question, please.
Good evening, Your Excellency.
Good evening.
An absolute honor to speak to you. I would like to ask you, would you think that adding more Latin within the music, within the liturgy, would be a most beautiful thing?
In the sense of sung Latin or just the Latin text?
Sung Latin.
Yes.
And, but sung Latin. I mean, I come from an Italian background, and I am actually sort of learning to speak Latin as well as a hobby. Mm-hmm. And sort of learning, sort of have introducing more Latin within the liturgy, I personally think would be a very beautiful thing, more traditional thing. Would you not agree with that?
Latin is certainly a very beautiful language, and the soul of our church is really Latin. Well, initially it was Greek, but after a few centuries, Latin became the language, and the whole liturgy really has developed with the Latin language. Musically, then, all of the traditional music, obviously before the Council, was in Latin, although people were beginning to sing hymns in the vernacular that Pope Pius XII allowed for that. So I think the singing of the Latin would enhance the beauty if it's sung well. I have heard sacred music in Latin sung poorly, and it's really bad when that happens. It doesn't help at all. So, traditional music can also be done poorly, but if it's done well, it will be beautiful. So because the music is beautiful and the words are uplifting. So I think it does add beauty, but we can also, that might be a too big of a jump for people. We can sing chant in the vernacular setting. I had mentioned about Father Samuel Weber has those resources. So I think Latin also has the advantage of uniting people from different language backgrounds. They can pray the Mass together when they can sing those standard parts of the Mass in Latin.
Giuseppe, thank you so much for that call from England. We do appreciate it. Archbishop Cordleone, thank you for a great hour.
Thank you for having me.
May we have your blessing before we go.
May the blessing of Almighty God come upon you and remain with you forever, the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit.
Amen. And again, let's give out that website. The Institute is called the Pope Benedict the 16th Institute.
Benedict the 16th Institute for Sacred Music and Divine Worship. And BenedictInstitute.org.
Again, thank you very much, Archbishop. A real honor and pleasure to have you here. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum. If you have any question on the life, the faith, the history of the Catholic Church, we'll do our very best to answer it. See you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.